All right, welcome to Movie Time Machine, your retro movie review podcast and pop culture podcast. We're talking movies from the past, we live in the present. I'm your host, Chad, and joining me this week is our encyclopedia of living, our living encyclopedia movie knowledge, James, and Mr. Fish Wrap Factory himself, host of the Midwest Mountain Sports Report podcast. It's Jamie. Thank you for joining us.
Happy to be here, Chad.
All right.
This week, it's been a while, guys. So this week, a couple things quick before we get into what we've been watching. We want to talk about Oppenheimer. We all got together in person, saw that live in IMAX, which is great. Can't wait to hear, now that we've had like a couple weeks of marinade on it, like our feelings and impressions still. Two, I want to talk about how Jamie was able to finish The Last of Us, like one of those recommended things that he finished, which is kind of amazing. And yeah, then we'll kind of go from there. Some little tidbits in between. But before we get into our topics of the week, how you guys been doing? What have you been watching?
Been doing good, but you kind of led it, Chad. I would love Jamie to start this with what he's been watching and what he's been completing.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's dive right into it.
Because I'm saying, like, if the whole episode today is about that, I am completely fine with it. Let's do it, Jamie. Let's see how far we get.
Okay, let's see. As far as what I've been watching The Bear on Hulu, also on FX, but I'm watching it on Hulu. It's great. I love it. I love that it's equal parts really high stakes, like Carmi has to save his restaurant, and also super low stakes. Like, this is just a day in the life of these people, and I love that. It's super chill while also frantic, as I imagine kitchens sometimes are. Now, as for what I have not finished this week, I was reading Empire, The Summer Moon, which is a book about the Comanche in Texas, and I did not finish it before it was due at the library, and I'm so mad. I'm going to have to go back because I still have like 100 more pages. So.
Don't you just do overdue fees at that point? Like, this sounds super, super ignorant, but how does the library work, Jamie? Can you talk to me about that? Because it's been a minute. Like, you can't just, I thought you used to be able to just extend or pay a late fee, like Blockbuster style.
Yeah, because you and like the five other people that still use the library will be okay with you having keeping that book for a couple more days.
I'm just curious because I always remember it's not like at the library you could actually like extend like, you know, a week or something like that. And it was just acceptable.
So fair question. And as you guys know me and our listeners do by this point, you should know that I did extend it twice and that there are.
Okay, so you've abused it at this point.
I did. And you can, I mean, you can just bring it back and take the fine. But again, you know me, my fines are, they're not high, mind you, but it's over $10. So I didn't want to do that either.
Do you have, so at the library, do you consider it like renting or borrowing? Like, and then in turn, do you have like borrower's guilt? Like where you extended it three times already and you know somebody else's name is in the next queue for this book. And they're just like, come on already. I was going to take this out on 4th of July.
A little bit, because that does really suck if there's a book you're waiting on the other end. But I've found that that's usually only the case with like brand new books. You know, like there's already a waiting list and you're already not going to read it for a year. So you might as well like go buy it or just wait a year. So for this, it's been out for a couple years. I didn't feel too bad, but I have been there.
Gotcha. I do have questions about The Bear also. Chad, have you watched The Bear?
No, I haven't. I was surprised to learn that it was about a kitchen.
Oh yeah,
not a bear.
Yeah, so not a bear. I mean, I'd say it's definitely recommended. Because I'm definitely caught up on it and excited for season three. Even though it'll take probably two more years for all content with writer's strike and everything. So, Jamie, how far are you in it?
I'm on episode 5. It's the one that opens in God, what's the sous chef's name in her apartment? I can't think of her name right now.
I can't off the top of my head. I know who you're talking about. Yeah, Chad, I recommend it. Jamie, keep going with it. It is a lot of fun. Chad, I would say the only thing for you, it's definitely got a lot going on for it, but Jamie, stop me if I'm wrong or correct me. Like some of the banter and like the restaurant is a family and the family going at each other's throats for different reasons, like in these high stakes situations. Or even not high stakes situation, just family dynamics. Like it's kind of like Succession-esque. That they're arguing and you are getting anxious at home as the viewer going, oh my God, can they just stop and focus on the task at hand?
Yeah, there's definitely a bit of that. And because they also, you know, no one's getting kicked out of the family, at least not yet. Maybe that happens later, but they are from Chicago, to your point. So there, you know, there's less of a filter as far as the Midwest goes. And I think that kind of plays well into the drama.
Absolutely. I will say just something to look forward to, Jamie. Like, there, I'm not giving away anything, but there's like two or three episodes in season two that are by far were my favorite of the series so far. And one of the episodes I have like in my head, it'll be nominated for Emmys, like for acting, writing, guest appearances, like all this. It's like, it was so good. So, and we can talk about that later when you get there.
I can't wait. And Chad, like James said, I feel like we know you, and this might actually hurt your odds of actually seeing it, but you would like this show.
I'm not trying to deter you.
No, I mean, always looking for something. What is this on? Is this like Showtime, Hulu?
It is available on Hulu. Okay. The show lives on FX, but it's available on Hulu. That's how I watched it.
All right. I have to check that out. Sweet. I'll add
what
it.
What about James or Chad? What have you guys been watching?
Ahsoka.
Go for it, Chad.
Hey, I know you guys haven't watched Ahsoka. I've watched the first two episodes. I think it's really good. There's some parts that are clunky, like all the other Star Wars shows so far up to this point. But I think it's probably, so far, I think the characters are some of the best out of any of those shows so far. Even like in Mando. There's some things that have been going on already. Unless these like actors are just like bad and it looks like they're doing something. But I think the writing so far is brilliant. I kind of like how it's going. It's already building a story. It's kind of slow, but it's like, it's kind of catching you up. The first two episodes kind of up to a couple of the characters up to this point. Doesn't dwell on it too long though. You get some nice action, get some nice lightsaber scenes already, duels. So I don't know. I love it. It's fun. And the opening of the first episode, I was like, holy crap, they took this right out of Yojimbo. So it's kind of cool to see that again. Star Wars loves its old samurai flick. So yeah, won't dwell on that long, but I don't know if I told you since last time we had a pod that I finished Veep. Seasons of that. I mean, that is a great like bedtime show because it's light, it's hilarious. Yeah, so definitely hop in. I mean, it took me like a couple episodes, like, but once you kind of get the rhythm and like the cadence of everything, and just keeping your ear out to just how quick and witty and just like there's just the joke. I mean, it's just so funny. If you laugh too hard at one line, like you're going to miss the next line that's just as funny kind of thing. So definitely recommend that. And right now we're into season three of Reservation Dogs, which is they drop a new episode every week. So I think we just watched like the fifth and latest episode last night, which so good. If you guys haven't started that either, it's a really good watch. I don't think there's anything really out there like it. You know, it's kind of telling like a kind of coming of age story, teenagers. So yeah, it's great. I wish I had somebody to talk to about the, I think it was the third episode of the season. They did something with like language that was like, oh my God, that's brilliant. I don't think I've ever seen that done before in film or TV. So I hope sometime in the future when somebody, and I know Casey watches the show, maybe when he gets to that point, we could talk about it. But it was, well, I was like, wow, this is like made this entire episode more terrifying than I think it would have been otherwise if it had been done in a more traditional way. So that's where I'm at. James, what's up with you?
All right. Can't remember from last time, but I watched the show Silo on Apple. And I binged that. So I really like that. The idea is, I don't know, something happened above 100 years earlier or longer. A group of people are, you know, living in this silo and, you know, a murder happens, which leads to several different other things, you know, occurring, and people trying to figure out like, you have very limited information of why they're down there, including the people that are there. Like, information had been deleted or burned, you know, or it just like they can't have certain technology to, because they say it'll like, hey, certain technology is why we are here in the first place. And like, so we just don't know what's happened to the Earth above. And, you know, there's lots of questions anyway. So it's super, I don't know. It's really cool. I definitely recommend it. And all the actors involved are really good. I started Hijack on Apple, with Idris Elba. And, that is one, I would have binged it if it was all available. It was a week to week show. I think it's all finished now. So I think I saw like 3 episodes to take down from it, but, really good show. It's exactly what it sounds like. They're on a plane and it's been hijacked. Bum, bum, bum. and then, yeah, I started and finished, the book Gone Girl. I like, here's the deal. Like, I've seen the movie, obviously. So I kind of, I have an idea of what's going to happen. I haven't seen it in a minute. So there's some parts that I forgot about, but, the way that book was written, like, I wanted to flip each page, actively. That's probably the fastest I read a book in a while. Cause I even had a normal life happening, but I still finished it in like a week, which was pretty good for me. So definitely recommended. Like, it was definitely well written. And then also, as far as, it made me start thinking about adaptations, because Gone Girl is a Fincher movie, who also did Fight Club, which we've talked about several times on here, which, like, I think that Fincher is pretty darn good at adapting books at this point, like the way I like from reading it too. And I'm sure there's way more better ones out there that have been adapted very well. But I think the author also helped with the screenplay for Gone Girl, so that probably was helpful in that situation. And then last but not least would be Clone Wars. I am on season 6 because I'm getting ready for Ahsoka. And there is some great, there's some great story arcs in Clone Wars that I really, really enjoy. And then also, like, watching Clone Wars, and then now, like, in my head, after I'm done, I want to go watch Revenge of the Sith. And it just, I don't think Revenge of the Sith does anything justice compared to, like, what was happening in between episodes 2 and 3. In my opinion, like, there's just too much going on that I think that they could have easily made Clone Wars like a live action series as well, to help accommodate before, like, even putting Revenge of the Sith out, if you will. But again, we just weren't there in how fast we could put out content. If Star Wars prequels came out today, then there's no doubt in my mind that Clone would have been came out in succession or slightly before Revenge of the Sith, because it would have led up to such a huge build. But yeah, that's what I've been doing. And now I started it before, but do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? I started it before, and now since I got back into reading with Gone Girl, I started reading this again. So I'm a few chapters in, and I'm going to see if I can take that down by next pod.
Nice. Yeah, that's cool. You know, after, like, seeing some more, like, Clone Wars and, like, Rebels into this new Ahsoka series, I was thinking, like, man, they should have just kind of led with this for somewhere in here for, like, the sequel trilogy, you know? There's so much content and so much they could have developed off this already there in front of them versus what they did.
But yeah, agreed.
All right, so Casey,
yo,
how you doing, man?
Oh, so good, so good.
Casey, what have you been watching? What do you recommend? What's been going on,
dude? Honestly, other than that, I think the topic at hand, literally nothing. My time has been consumed with nerdy activities. Baldur's Gate 3 came out, my friends. So I have been spending every waking moment that isn't dedicated to work and family to running around in this Dungeons & Dragons world and rolling dice and making decisions and seeing the chaos unfold. But I have seen Oppenheimer a second time. I did go with my wife and saw it in 70 millimeters. So I've seen it in both IMAX and 70 millimeters. So that was pretty cool to get both.
Where did you see it in 70?
South Daly Dinah.
Oh, okay.
They had a little theater there. Yeah, and not only that, the seats in that theater were the recliner ones. So it was recliner, 70 mil. And, are we talking Oppie yet? Because I got some good nuggets.
I think this is 70. I think this is a good segue. We're just talking about what we've been doing, but yeah, Oppenheimer. Now that you've seen it twice, and I was just telling the other guys, like, you know, we've had a couple of weeks of marinade on it, but it's obviously going to be fresher to you in your mind. So dive right in, Casey. Give us your thoughts and opinions.
Well, I think the biggest thing that I wanted to point out, especially since I saw it in 70, was I can't remember seeing a movie with a reel, like with reels. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, I saw them when I was younger, and I probably sat a lot closer. The theater was more packed. But my wife and I went at, I think, 11:15 on a weekday, so the first showing of the day. So I think there were maybe six other people in the theater. But the coolest sensation, I thought, that kind of solidified. Not, I mean, obviously the film started and it looked different because it's 70 millimeter. You got to see the grain. That was really cool. But I thought the coolest part was during the bomb scene where you're expecting the explosion and you're hearing him breathing. It was him breathing and it was so impactful. And then I could still hear the of the reels behind me. And it was like, I don't know. It was a really surreal, like, hell yeah, this is a GD movie. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. It was really cool that it almost interrupted and took me out of the movie a little bit, but in a way that like made me appreciate what it was. I don't know. I thought it was a really unique, like, oh snap, I can hear the reels right now. So that was really cool to see it in 70.
Yeah, James didn't used to do, was that you that used to do projector?
Yes, I used to work in a movie theater, and so yeah, even Casey, when you even said the reels, like in my head, I was thinking like news reels, and I was trying to like remember the movie, but then as you started describing it, I'm like, oh, like the film from the projector, got it. Yeah, so yes, I did used to do that back in the day. It actually, like, and then I felt like, I don't know, like before seats got to be able to be reclined and comfortable and all that, I feel like my parents always wanted us to sit in the back. Like that was my mom's preference. And so you're right. I never even thought about it until right now that like it's been a minute since I've actually heard that. And that was like part of the experience, I guess, going in. At first it was annoying, but now it's definitely nostalgic.
Yeah, great. Casey. So go ahead. You had a question, Jamie.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm so mad jealous. Like, you got to see it both ways. You got to see it as a movie. And then, I don't know if you guys felt this, but, like, in the IMAX, when the bomb goes off, that feels like the complete opposite of what you're describing. Because you feel the shaking. You feel like it's, like, the maximum way to see that movie. And you got to see it both ways. That's so cool.
Dude. Yeah, and actually, I do think that scene with the audio did maybe feel more impactful from a filmmaking or movie standpoint in IMAX, because it did go silent as he was breathing, and you did, when it did hit and boomed, it rumbled because it's IMAX, so you feel it in your soul. And yes, it was nice and loud and awesome, and the audio balancing and mixing was really good in 70, obviously, too. But there's something about that big IMAX spectacle. It was a unique experience. I would say if you're going to see it again, try to see it in 70, because it's almost, obviously it's not a different movie, but it's definitely a different experience.
I just remember when we did see it in the theater, and like how they, you know, it was the picture of the bomb first, and then all of a sudden the sound, and like the whole, all of us jumped like as soon as that happened. And that was definitely a cool build-up moment during that.
I don't know if it's because I saw it a second time, so I was able to think about it more as I was seeing it. But there were a few, and maybe it was the 70, and because it was less a spectacle, more a film. I don't know. I think it's probably because it was the second time. But some of those scenes, especially the one where he was giving the speech to the, you know, everyone in the room, and they're all stomping, where you finally realize what that stomping sound is, and he's like having visions, and he like steps on the like burnt up corpse or whatever. That hit me a lot harder the second time around. I think I choked up a little bit and had to fight some tears. I was like, man, this is heavy. And again, it might be because I've been processing, had seen it and was able to think about it. And so then seeing it again kind of brought me right back to it. But I think emotionally it hit me harder the second time, because maybe, you know, it's less of a spectacle, more of something I'm watching and thinking about. But yeah, I think it was more emotional the second time through too, which was big.
Yeah, so now going, so overall, I mean, this obviously this is a movie that seems like we are all kind of crazy about. So that's great. I like hearing that you actually went back and then took your partner back to watch this film. I've been like contemplating this the whole time. I just like, I haven't really stopped thinking about it. And my wife was just like, oh, you know, I really want to see it. I was like, well, we can still go see it, I think, you know, like I want to go see it again. I want to go see it again in a theater. And I can't say that about too many films. So yeah, maybe I will check that out. But yeah, I think about this movie like every couple of days. It's just like, you know, I'll see something, maybe something referencing it, or like a, I don't know, some sort of like trailer for it. And I'm just like, wow, it was just thinking about just different parts of that film. So is anybody, but Jamie James, since it's been a while since we've watched it, had a couple of weeks since you all saw it in person, which I thought was great. It was just kind of good to kind of get together with, I haven't done that in a very long time, get together with a group of guys, go see a film, and just being able to chill a little bit afterwards, you know, before it part go our ways. But Jamie James, like, what are you just your overall thoughts on the film?
I think the first thing that came out to me was just that I love that Nolan's gotten this street cred at this point, like with his films and the type of movies he wants to make, that everybody wants to be a part of them. So like, even like reading some things after the fact, like Matt Damon, I guess, was going to take a break from acting for a bit and focus on family stuff. And he said, like, you know, who knows how real this was, but apparently said, unless Nolan comes knocking, I'm not going to do anything for a bit. And then all of a sudden he's like, well, I kind of wanted you to play this role. And he's like, okay, I guess I will. But even in the film, there is so many scenes where you're seeing actors and actresses, like you recognize them, whether you know them by name or not, or maybe you do recognize them and didn't realize they're in it. Like, I had no idea Josh Hartnett was going to be in the film or whatever. And Casey Affleck showing up, and you know, there's just different scenes where like they didn't have maybe really huge parts in it, but it was like significant to the caliber of actor that they are, to be in there. But it was just fun then, like as the movie progressed, going like, all right, whose voice is that? Who's this going to be? So I just thought that was cool that, you know, even if it was just a quick, like, you know, 3-minute scene or a throwaway line or whatever it is, like people wanted to be a part of this spectacle, which is just really, really cool. I think, and then the next part, obviously the movie score for me. So I was a huge fan and have listened to it a few times since, like when I write schedules at work and all that. And one thing I read about it, which I like, definitely now, like when you think about it, I'm going to mess up his name, Ludwig Göransson. I can't pronounce it, but anyways, he was the guy that he won the Oscar for Black Panther. And he also does the Mandalorian theme music. Chad, but Ludwig, him and Chris Nolan, like, I guess decided like they didn't want any drums or percussion or very minimally in the score, because they thought that might make everything sound almost too military, and they wanted to stay away from that with this film, because that's not what this was trying to be about. As you guys could see, like, there was like, I don't even think, like, was there even one army scene? Casey, from seeing it more recently, is there something like that where they show that? Or it's just all, it's all, like, getting things prepared, preparations for this stuff?
I think, yeah, the only military personnel you see are, like, in the town, in Los Alamos and stuff. I don't really know that they, yeah, I don't think they show any scenes of war. And if I remember correctly, the only time you even are really faced with the consequences is when you're watching the reactions of people, of those people that were responsible for making it, seeing the effects of it, which I contend is even more impactful. We've all seen, you know, some of the images and things historically, but to see like the reactions of those people who had a hand in it, I think that was even more powerful. But no, I don't think there's tanks or planes or anything like that.
Yeah, no, that was just another really cool, just another cool thing. I thought it was just the score. I know that, we always look forward to Hans Zimmer scoring Nolan movies, but Zimmer's been off. Like, I guess Dune has been a very like a project piece. Like, that was like his passion that he wanted. Like, that ever since they heard it was going to be remade, he wanted to be a part of it. So that's what Zimmer's been doing, is Dune 1 and Dune 2, which coincided with Tenet and this movie. And so that's why Ludwig has jumped in instead of Hans on the last two films. So we'll see what happens on Nolan's next film. I'm actually curious, with the 70 millimeter and filming like this, are we going to see more directors? Like, I think of like older directors like Spielberg saying like, well, F it, if they did it, like, I'm going to do that on my next movie. Are we going to see some things like that come back with some more classically trained directors, or are we, is this just kind of like a one-off? But I guess, I don't know, like, who knows? And we all know or heard that Nolan likes shooting scenes in IMAX. He's been doing it since The Dark Knight. Like, this is just the first one where he's done all of it, even including to the point of having to get a hold of Kodak and be like, hey guys, can you make me some black and white film for this movie? And it's like, Kodak's like, we don't even make film anymore, Chris, but we'll see what we can do. No. So, it's just, I don't know. It was just a really cool experience. I was happy to, I'm happy I saw it in theater. I keep going over in my head, should I go see it again while it's still in theaters before viewing it at home? But yeah. Jamie?
Oh man, there's so much to think about and unpack with this movie. I like you guys, I loved it. I was riveted, as I am with most Nolan movies, thought about it for days after. And real quick, James, to your point about directors doing this, I think the ones who, like the tried and true filmmakers, will do this. The last time, I think the only movie I saw at that same theater, Casey, was Hateful Eight, when they did the 70mm Roadshow, and that was Tarantino. So I don't think it's crazy that that could come back. But for Oppenheimer, man, I think so. And, you know, this movie, like Nolan does, tries to get you to think about big picture stuff. So I'm thinking, okay, it's important and impactful that we have a British filmmaker talking about an American experiment and, you know, the American final act of the war. So there's something there. I still haven't figured out what it is, but there's something there. And I couldn't tell, man. I couldn't tell if he admires Oppenheimer or doesn't, because it was, I noticed too, as I usually do, that this was his only movie where there's a sex scene. I haven't seen Tenet. Maybe there's one in Tenet, but yeah, and there, but it's more than that. There, like, there's a love scene. Like, he loves these women in his life, and but at the same time too, we also get him being a terrible father. So it's like this weird balance of caring for humanity and then also really not knowing how to with his kids. So I do think there's something there, because it, you know, it stood out that Christopher Nolan put a sex scene in his movie. You know, that means something. And then what else?
Maybe, man, he's just a pervert.
But he's not.
I want to actually.
I was going to say, kind of true. I was going to say, I mean, maybe he casted Florence Pugh, was like, you know what? She's on my top 10. I get a hall pass for her. So let's just film her tan and sweaty a few times.
A lot.
I think I'm going to jump on that, because I think the number one thing I've pulled from this is, I don't know that there's, and maybe there's a little bit of one, but it's a movie full of complicated characters. I don't know that there's anyone who's straight laced good or straight laced bad. You could even argue that Robert Downey Jr. What was this? Clout? How did I pronounce that name again?
Sender. Anyway,
but his character, I felt at first, you know, I was kind of sympathetic, like, oh yeah, you know, Oppenheimer is kind of narcissistic. Why is he opposing these things? Was he hiding the spy or whatever? But then by the end, he's not. You realize he's a terrible person. But I think that's the point, is that Oppenheimer is an extremely complicated person. You know, he has strong morals and convictions, but he was also kind of a narcissist and a womanizer. And he kind of used people because he thought he was bigger than that. And so I think the point of the sex scenes was to show the hurt that he caused his own wife, right? Because that scene of him, of her seeing Florence riding him while telling, like, that was that huge, right? To show her trauma. So I don't think it was just I don't think it was for any one reason. I think it showed his complex womanizing characteristics. It showed the trauma that his wife also got. But I think the moral to me, or the point of all of it, was almost every character was kind of complicated. You know, there was no, even Matt Damon, I loved him so much in the movie, but then even at the end, he has to, you know, be his military guy and be like, no, under these guidelines, I wouldn't have hired him. And he tries to save face and be like, I wouldn't have hired any of those guys. And I mean, obviously I liked his character a lot, but even he was complicated in the end.
Well, he kind of treats Oppenheimer like a one night stand, you know?
Yeah.
At the end, he got what he needed from him after the end of the war. It's just like, okay, guy, you know, and just,
and Oppie just called him on it too earlier, where he's like, when he was saying, wait, you picked me because of my problems so you could control me. So he was complicated.
Robert Downey was Lewis Strauss was Strauss, the yeah. character. And then, yeah, I like what you said about that, Casey, is just that we're dealing with a lot of complicated characters in there. And it almost like it makes you look at it like one. I mean, that's a win for the nerds. Even the nerds get to have sexy women all around them at all times. But then just with how complicated everybody was, I lost it. Where was I going with this? Chad, nerds, take over.
Complicated, nerds, lost.
Nerds, complicated, yeah, I know.
Complicated characters.
That's real life, though. It's a movie about a real life person, so the character should be complicated because that's who we are. We're humans.
Yeah, we're not monoliths, right? Like we,
right?
We're not. Well, that's, you know, we try
that's
to
let the AI just. No, but actually, watching this, like, thinking, you know, all these different things had happened. Like, so, you know, Oppenheimer even knew, like, hey, you picked me because I was complicated. And, like, then all of a sudden is going through these motions of these hearings after the fact. Like, how many things have happened, even, like, now, like, hey, we were going to do something. But, like, so many people are like, nope, I don't want any part of that. Because as soon as like, you get what you want, like, you need somebody to blame, somebody to be the fall person or whatever it is. And so, like, we just, you know... like we need something to happen in the moment, but then we try to make somebody else the fall guy. Like, and so why would anybody try to go above and beyond in these situations anymore?
Yeah, James, I like what you said. And I think that that's kind of part of Casey's bigger thing too, that he outlined is it's complicated because he's not on trial. At least I don't think so. Correct me if I'm wrong. He's on trial for being a communist, not for dropping the bomb that killed.
It's not a trial. It's to renew his government clearance. It's even more mundane and bureaucratic than that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But, and I just mean like for thematically, for the purpose of the movie, he's not on trial for helping to kill all those people. It's for being a communist. You know, it's like we have all of these crazy rules that are so not the point in this country. And I think part of it too, is just exploring that, like that wasn't the bad thing. The communism was not the bad thing. It's all the dead Japanese. And
right. It's just right. And also they're pissed that the secret on how to develop the bomb got out so quickly, right? And yeah, they were trying to pin that on him, and that's why they weren't going to give him a security clearance. But yeah, that was great how that all played off too, or played out.
I did think that was interesting, actually. Chad, you just reminded me. So when they even in the movie were talking about, like, you know, it was like these scientific journals that were getting published from Europe, and like all of a sudden they would get to see them. And so, like, obviously, you know, no electronic email, anything like that. Like, they're getting these newspapers or journals from, you know, weeks ago being published. And then they're like, hey, somebody in Germany split the atom. And they're like, nah, that's impossible. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, 2 minutes later in the movie, they're like, holy crap, we just did it. Like, you know, so it's like they're publishing how to do these things and then in turn doing them, like, directly, like these things that were supposed to be impossible. It is crazy to me that, like, we are published, like, in these scientific journals, like, we're just publishing things to let everybody know. It seemed like the information was like, and like they wanted everybody to have it to better whatever our situation or knowledge was of the world, the atom, whatever else. And so it's kind of weird that, like, obviously creating a bomb of this magnitude, they wanted to hide it a little bit because they didn't want everybody to have that power. But the thought that it wasn't going to get out there is kind of ludicrous to me, especially within the scientific world.
Yeah, just think of, like, the religion of science, though, in that era, you know, just like how quickly things are beginning to progress. I was just kind of thinking about that. Right. Like, science is probably more of the scene, like, oh, science is like this thing to, like, save everything, make everything better. Right. But we're, you know, the beginning of the 20th century. Right. Science is also being used to, like, oh, we can create these chemical weapons. We can create these war machines, you know, like I think that's mixed in there somewhere too. And kind of like Jamie with your other topic says, like, you don't know exactly where to stick a pin in it, but I was getting that kind of feeling too, from what you're describing. Thoughts and feelings.
Thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers.
Did you guys have, unless if you're not ready to move on, that's fine. But I just curious of, like, what was your, like, knowledge base of this going in, like, this era, Oppenheimer, the bomb going in versus after.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I knew Hiroshima. I knew the bombs were dropped in that part, but none of the stuff that led up to it.
Right. And I think that, like, anytime, I mean, I feel like when you hear Manhattan Project, like, I always knew it had something to do with this. But also my knowledge was more like, remember that Super Nintendo Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game? I'm pretty sure that was also called the Manhattan Project. So that's where my head goes.
I guess the new Manhattan Project was the new.
It all goes back to NES.
NES.
Fun fact, I think, Chad, that you always love with Nolan, when in the bunker, Oppenheimer says that they'll know if the bomb is successful in an hour and 58 minutes. The bomb goes off in the movie theater in an hour and 58 minutes on the mark.
Oh, good. I'm glad you found that. I knew there was going to be something in there with, like, time and exactly the pinpointing at. That's awesome. Where'd you get
that? Sure there's, that was just on IMDb, but I'm sure that there's plenty of other Easter eggs involved in it, as Nolan always is.
Yeah.
Just so cool.
He's so cool, man.
She get the editing Oscar alone for that. Just whoever that person was.
Right, because he does that too in Interstellar, right? With like the time dilation when they're on that planet with the gigantic wave.
Oh yeah. I love how dilation. What a great title.
Isn't that what they do to your eyeballs when you go get an eye exam? Is it? Oh, that's something else.
Yeah, maybe? Dilate your
time dilation.
Time dilation is the same concept, right?
Yeah, cool. Who knew
the secret of the universe, man,
was at your optometrist? Fun fact: Oppenheimer became an optometrist after losing the security.
Did he really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my god! I was like, "Are you kidding?" I'm like, why did it not end like that?
Well, favorite scenes. What's your favorite scenes? I have a few favorite moments.
I don't know. For me, it was that the use of like silence with the bomb and like it hitting. Mm-hmm. It's like the theory of or like it's some like Taoist thing, right? Of something. Something is there when there is nothing, kind of some shit like that. Yeah. I don't know. I don't have my Tao book with me, but that's the first one that stands out to me.
And I like that they also use that silence when he a little bit when he was struggling and giving that speech, how it kind of faded in and out. I thought that was a really cool kind of almost callback to how he would, you know, how he's processing it, kind of back to that same thing.
I think the cool scene for me, along with, just visual and sound scenes, obviously, for the whole thing, which is what a movie is. Emily Blunt, though, her, deposition at the end. Short scene, short monologue, but she just owned it. And I just, that was super powerful.
Oh, man, I really liked it. And it was a movie scene. I recognize that. But the syringe and the apple. Because if he actually did that, I'm sure it didn't play out like Niels Bohr grabs it and he throws it away. But that was just a well-executed movie depiction of him doing that in real life.
It got my heart racing right away. Like, that was anxiety-inducing right from the jump.
Agree.
So I don't even know if I have a lot of favorite scenes. I think, ultimately, I think it stuck the landing. Just kind of the entire ending made me so happy. Like, because it starts with, I mean, the music's swelling, and you get to see Emily Blunt reject the handshake, which was such a badass, subtle little badass thing, and the music, like, hits right when that happens. That bit, combined with Strauss, like, getting fucked at the end, which was so satisfying, and then finally, like, hearing what he had told Einstein, like, those like events all culminating to the score explode. Oh, it was just, I don't know that they could have ended it in a more like mic drop. My heart is still beating, but the movie is over. It reminded me of Whiplash. When that movie ended, I like took a breath and my heart was still racing. It was kind of
Dude. Yeah. Whiplash. Holy. Yeah. That's one where like, it felt like you're white knuckling or holding your breath for far too long.
Oh man. Mm-hmm. I got to see that movie.
Oh yeah. It's good. And I want to comment on another really
you're like giving me goosebumps just talking about that scene though, Casey. But
right, that was worth going to see it a second time, was to be able to experience that again, because that was, and that's something I won't be able to get at home because it's got to be loud. You have to feel that scene too, right? So that was awesome. Yeah. But speaking of feeling, I thought it was really funny, and obviously it's not my favorite scene, but it's pretty much Nolan, right, to the core. But the scene where someone told him what's his face, his like science buddy, the guy that was on the train with him, kept giving him food. I don't remember the actor's name. He's amazing. Telling him, take off that stupid uniform. You're a scientist. You know, look like yourself. And he goes and puts his suit on. And just that scene, it's so mundane. He's putting a suit on. It's whatever. But God damn it, did the score just like just hits hard. Like the horn hits. And even that, the most boring, mundane. I mean, it's not boring and mundane. It makes sense. It made sense in this story. But he's just literally putting on clothes and a hat and walking down the street. And you're like, woo, let's go. Like the score just hits. I love that. I thought that was so funny.
Casey, I'm glad you said that, because yeah, the score, I already said, is what kind of hit me too. But that's where, when I was talking about the movie Air, like the, you know, Nike Michael Jordan story that Affleck directed with Matt Damon. But like the songs they put in there, like the 80s songs, were fantastic and great, and the whole movie was good. But it was missing something during those dialogue scenes that were, you know, mundane and like were actually kind of, it seemed kind of slow because of that. And I always said that the thing that was missing was like a heavy score. Oppenheimer, they're talking about physics. Like you said, he's just putting on clothes and the score is driving you to the edge of your seat. And that's what I think was missing in Air. The score just, it can be so powerful and drive a movie and all your attention. So yeah, I loved it.
All right, Jamie, final thoughts. I know you got to run.
Or we lost him already. We might have lost him. Oh, okay. He jumped. We lost him 3 minutes ago.
Jamie's favorite scene was the sex scene.
I knew it.
Oh my God.
Which one though? The actual sex scene where he got, it was a little cringe when she's like, read this.
Oh yeah.
That was a little cringe. Like, I have become.
Text me. He said all of the sex.
Yes. Knew it.
He actually didn't do that, but I'm just saying that's what he would have texted us all.
Although the scene of Florence Pugh riding him in the like interrogation room, we can give that one to him. Cause it was very impactful and it had some sex in it. That feels like a Jamie scene.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah. Remember when she's like describing why he was in the hotel with her and
yeah.
Oh, that was tough. That was heavy.
I don't want to sound like such a prude though with these things, but I'm always kind of like, man, like how does this, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like it doesn't do anything to drive the story. Maybe it does. I don't know.
Anyway. I think you're right. I don't think the initial sex scene was necessary. They could have showed their blossoming relationship maybe a different way, or maybe less full frontal. I do think the interrogation room one did a really good job of like showing the inner trauma that what's her face kind of knew and was dealing with, hearing all this, even though she knew, but like had to hear it. So it's like literally having to I don't know. I thought that was pretty unique scene there. But I do think the, you know, read the I have become death while I ride you was a little cringe. I think that, yeah, is maybe Nolan doesn't really know how people have sex, because I've never, you know, read books in the middle. I'm usually too busy to go find a book.
Great. All right. Any other final thoughts before we close her out for the day? The pod.
Chad, I would like, assuming that you watched the trailer and I did not, Rebel Moon, are you excited or what?
No, I don't know. My first thought is it looks like a sci-fi Netflix movie, and that doesn't really move the needle for me. I was kind of disappointed, and I didn't even watch the whole trailer. It came up as like a advertisement on like YouTube, and I was like, what is this? I was like, oh, this is like the new Rebel Moon movie, because I saw like one of the actors that I seen in like some of the promo art, and I was like, oh. Then I just looked it up and I was like, yeah, that's what it was. Then I found the other trailer and I shared it, but yeah, not, I don't know. I guess I'm not that excited about it.
Well, no, that's fine. I think it, I just looked at the poster and I remember reading about it. And so I was excited. It just, in the sense that Snyder was putting out his own thing that I, if I remember correctly, this was like initially his pitch for a new Star Wars film and then decided he was just going to do it himself. And make it his own. So I'm excited to see it in that aspect. I think it's really, I think it's smart of him though. If it said like, I think it was like December 22nd, somewhere around there where it was going to come out, which is awesome because that'll be like a month after Dune. So people are hopefully already like still juiced up in sci-fi world because of that.
Right. So they want a little bit more to kind of get that fixed.
Yeah, because if it's like part, I think if I remember on the poster, I think it said like part one in December and part two in March or something.
In April, I think.
So like, I think people will get excited about that in the sense that like, oh man, what am I going to do to fill this sci-fi void? And then, well, they got that and they got,
it kind of feels like, like in video games, this used to happen a lot more maybe like 10 years ago, but like there'd be like a really big video game, say like a Halo, or there's like some whatever big role-playing game that comes out, everybody's into it. And then you get like a B-tier studio that makes like kind of like a copycat version of it, where it's maybe is cool, but like when you play it, it maybe has like the cool mechanic, but something off about it just seems off. That's how I feel about this move. I'm definitely going to watch it for sure, but
yeah. I hear you. I hear what you're saying.
All right, cool. Hey, Casey, have you watched Dune yet? Because I think you should.
No, but the trailer for the second one made me really excited to go back and watch the first one first, because I didn't even see the first one. So, I just missed it. You know, I don't watch trailers. I don't watch a ton of TV, so I just didn't get hyped for the first one, and I didn't read the books. But it looks pretty sweet. I think I'd be down.
I gotta say, like watching Dune the first time, like, and I hadn't seen or read any of the books either. So, like, this is my first viewing. I didn't even see the '80s edition of it. I watched it. I enjoyed like the spectacle of like it or whatever. But then after I don't know, 3 or 4 months went by or 6 months, and then I watched it again. I really appreciated it then. And I think it's cause it helped me, cause I knew some of the storylines and the family arcs and things going on. So, I didn't have to pay attention as much to the detail, or I was allowed to pay attention to the detail because I knew what was generally going to come. So yeah,
it
was
really good. It's dense with lore from like the start. It's like that's where it kind of feels like Games of Thrones-ish in a way. It's like when you go back and watch Game of Thrones again, you start picking up stuff early in the like the first season. It's like, oh my god, they're already talking about this guest guy or this family or whatever. So I've just started reading the first book, which I think it's been good to kind of have like a little bit of like the movie knowledge, and then I know there's more it's probably going to be in that story, but I don't know. I love Dune. I'm really excited for the second one, even though like that trailer is like super spoiler heavy, but whatever.
Yeah.
Great. Great movie with an awesome score.
Right.
That's another one where like the score hits.
Well, that's another like I can't pronounce his last name.
Villeneuve. He did the score for Blade Runner 2049, which is awesome as well.
Well, no, that's the director. Like the score was.
Oh, yeah.
But the director. Oh, yeah.
That's right. Was it?
But he's another one. Yeah, same director as Blade Runner 2049, and that's why I'm like, he's another director that I think, again, looking at a movie like this with so many epic actors and talented people, and I know it's a huge story, like you need something like that, like Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings-ish, but like I think he's another one that everyone is looking at like, hey, like these are our big directors, or he already is clearly with getting, to do Dune and Dune 2. So these are other people that are probably saying like, hey, for bit parts, like I'd gladly take what you can give me. And so just really, really cool. But I agree. Like I'm so sick of trailers showing so much. Like we have the ability now to see any content we want whenever we want, including like replaying these trailers frame by frame after we've seen them. So stop. Like in the theater, don't force me to. I was like, I only want in movie theaters, like when I'm forced to watch before a movie, I only want teasers and that's it.
Yeah. Definitely. All right. God, I thought I had maybe one more thing to say, but oh well. Side note before we go, we should try to figure out a movie within like the next couple of hours, maybe in the chat to watch for the next pod. To get back.
Sounds good.
So
when we talk this out, let's start with maybe theme. And then once we are on board with whatever theme, then let's throw out some movies and we'll figure it out.
All right, cool. All right, thank you for listening to this episode of Movie Time Machine, where we review Oppenheimer, give our thoughts and opinions on other stuff. You can catch us podcast drops on Mondays. Check us out. If you want to leave any questions or comments, you can go into the POG details and follow the link there and submit. So thank you for listening, and catch you next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.